From Jeffersonville to Breezewood, Reading to Somerset, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the fate of a program designed to give students in the worst school districts in the state educational options remains in limbo as just part of the Pennsylvania state budget has been approved. Guy Shiraki of the Commonwealth Foundation is here with an update. Collections from Pennsylvania's corporate net income tax remain strong as minor cuts in the tax rate have begun to take effect. Eric Montardi and Scott Cross are here with an Allegheny Institute report. And you've likely noticed that gas prices have gone up to $4 a gallon. The Biden administration's war on fossil fuels is to blame. Emily Green from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Guy Shiraki in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Governor Josh Shapiro has been in office now for 6 months, but an analysis by the Commonwealth Foundation found his administration had the least productive first 6 months of any chief executive in the past 50 years. The analysis compares the number of general legislative and appropriations actions signed by the governor through the end of July. Just 15 bills reached the governor's desk, contrasted with an average of 86 bills signed in the first 6 months of their term by his predecessors. Shapiro has been dealing with a partisan divide in the legislature, but so have past governors who have had more success in getting legislation enacted into law. Outgoing Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, as does most high-profile elected officials, has a political action committee, supposedly to help elect other candidates to office. But the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that Kenney's PAC, which launched in 2020, has spent most of his money on consultants. Of the more than $780,000 raised by the PAC over the past 3 years, only about $60,000 actually was spent on non-consultant campaign activity. Josh Shapiro has dealt a major financial blow to women's pregnancy services by canceling a state contract with Real Alternatives, an organization that operates more than 24 crisis pregnancy centers in Pennsylvania. Real Alternatives provides women's health services and support as an alternative to having an abortion. Pro-abortion groups applauded the move, which places a wide range of women's health services at risk. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. About 80% of the Pennsylvania state budget has been signed into law, but a continued dispute over helping the poorest of students in the state's most underperforming school districts remains a sticking point in getting the balance of the spending plan approved. Here with an update is Guy Shiraki. Guy is with the Commonwealth Foundation, and he writes for a number of opinion platforms. Guy, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Guy, we've had quite an active summer here with the issue of school choice, particularly the Lifeline Scholarship, or as it got somewhat renamed, PASS program. We had a deal, then we didn't have a deal. We had a budget stalemate. We don't have a budget stalemate. Can you give us some state of play at the moment? Where do things actually stand now that we've gotten into the middle of August?
Well, we're at a point we've never been before where the budget, as you mentioned, is mostly passed, but not totally passed. And when it comes to Lifeline Scholarships, or now PASS Scholarships, which is essentially helping the poorest children get out of the worst schools in Pennsylvania, which should be in everybody's interest, sending students to the schools that we know are historically bad, where at times literally no child in 4th or 8th or 11th grade when they take tests, literally no child is doing work at grade level. It's in everybody's interest to morally, academically, economically that these kids find a school. We're at an unusual time because the budget is not quite finished, and this issue is central to it. And there are many legislators, particularly Republicans in the Senate, who are pushing ahead. And so while the budget is about 80% finished, it's not. As I joke from time to time, if you imagine this, Pennsylvania's gotten a brand new computer, but we haven't agreed on what software to put on it yet. And that's kind of the bills that are left. In political jargon, they say that they're all the code bills, and they're sort of the instructions or the software. Those bills haven't been passed. So for the legislators that still feel strongly about passing Lifeline, about rescuing these kids out of really bad, historically bad schools, there's still an opportunity. So I think we're going to hear about this through August, September, probably at least until October.
Doesn't it seem a bit odd to you, Guy, that, as you pointed out, these are the poorest of children in the most failing school districts, almost all of which, if not all, are represented in the State House and State Senate by Democrats, yet it's Democrats in the State House that created the situation, as well as Governor Josh Shapiro reneging on a deal that he had made with Senate Republicans. But it's largely the opposition of Democrats in the House that's prevented the Lifeline Scholarship Program from happening. But it's their very constituents who would benefit from it. How do you work yourself into a situation like this?
Yet another interesting, bizarre turn in Pennsylvania politics. As we just discussed, we have a budget that's 80% finished, but not entirely finished yet. We're sitting here in the middle of summer. And now the issue that everybody's debating are Lifeline scholarships. And as you correctly point out, the children that would be helped, the students that would be helped, are overwhelmingly in communities represented by Democrats. And the main proponents are overwhelmingly Republican. And the opponents are mainly Democrats. And look, I recently wrote a column in Broad and Liberty where I've been writing for several years, going back to the lockdowns and the mandates of 2020. My most recent column addresses that head on. You can't help but notice that starting with the House Majority Leader, Matt Bradford, who represents the Methacton area, the Lansdale area of Montgomery County, that the most vocal opponents of Lifeline scholarships happen to be white Democrat legislators who come from the suburbs, who represent upper middle class and upper class school districts and communities, opposing the poorest children trapped in the worst schools. And across the state, folks would know them as schools that overwhelmingly are in places like Philadelphia or Harrisburg or Reading or Pittsburgh, Wilkes-Barre. And it is, I don't want to say it's not just ironic. I think it's shameful that the leading opponents are suburban legislators who have the luxury of sending their children to among some of the best schools in the state. Meanwhile, they're opposed to this. And let's just take a moment and put a finer point on this. The Lifeline Scholarship Program is not a big bureaucracy. It's not hard to understand or complicated. It's very simply this. The governor said he was supportive of this, and I believe a majority of legislators supported it. It's a simple program. There would be money set aside in a scholarship fund that parents whose kids are in these worst schools could apply to and access to send their kids to another school. They could pick a parochial school. They could pick another public school, perhaps out of the district they're in. They could pick a private school, a Jewish day school, a Quaker school. They could pick any other school other than the school they're in. And again, I remind your listeners, some of the schools that Pennsylvania children go to are in the bottom. Now, again, when you rank schools, somebody's in the bottom. But these just aren't in the bottom because we have to rank them. These schools are in the bottom because they would be abject failures in any state, in any community. These are schools where less than one-third of the children meet their grade qualifications. And in some cases, again, I remind your listeners, zero. And I'm not exaggerating. There are literally schools in Pennsylvania where kids are forced to go because their parents can't afford to move or send them anywhere else. There are literally schools in Pennsylvania where not one child in the 11th grade is doing 11th grade work in reading or math. And you have to point out the fact that these children are disproportionately African-American and Hispanic. They are, by definition, lower income, and they're being stopped. And that's why all of us, regardless of your party, regardless of where you live, we should all be interested in rescuing these children and having them have the opportunity to go somewhere else.
Matt Bradford, whom you referenced, for those who don't know, is the majority leader in the State House of Representatives. And I say majority, right now the State House of Representatives is actually tied at 101-101. And there likely will be a one-seat Democrat majority after a special election here in Allegheny County in a few weeks. Having said that, Matt Bradford guy wouldn't even let this come up for a vote. Had it gone to the floor for a vote, we're now starting to see some members of the Democrat caucus who are saying, hey, we support this. So is Matt Bradford really stifling the will of the legislature by not even allowing it to vote on the issue?
Loman, that's an excellent point. And for folks that follow things, they may know this. And for folks that don't follow us closely, the way the legislature works, whether it's in Pennsylvania or even down in the U.S. in Congress, the leader, the majority leader, decides what bills are voted on when and whether or not they ever come up for a vote. Matt Bradford, who's a legislator from the Lansdale area, the Methacton School District. By the way, the Methacton School District, according to the Pennsylvania Department of Education, is rated 26th out of 500 school districts. So his kids, his neighbors, go to the 26th best school district out of 500, the top 5% in the state. And he's lecturing how kids that go to the 500th school district, the worst school district, but he decided he wouldn't bring up for a vote because politically he'd prefer to listen to the teachers union than the parents. And you're right. There are now developments where more and more Democratic legislators, particularly representing these communities in cities like Reading and Philadelphia, are beginning to voice their concern and saying, we should have this. Another interesting development is the leader of the Philadelphia Building Trades Union, the trade association of all the trades, the pipe fitters and the glaziers and the cement masons. He spoke out and said that, you know what, we ought to have choice. We ought to have Lifeline. And he explained why. He has it for his kids. And when before, and now he can afford it because he's the president of a union. But more than that, this labor leader said, you know how he had school choice when his young child first went to school, when they didn't have the money, when he didn't have the money, he found a way for school choice. You know why? He lied about where they lived so that his child could go to a different school, a safer school where he had a chance to thrive. Is that the state we want? Do we want a state where parents literally have to lie? He told on the radio that he had to explain to his son, don't tell them where you really live. You have to give them this other address. You could hear in his voice the anxiety of a dad having to recount the story of teaching his son to lie so that he could go to a school that was safe where he could learn. Do we really want to be in a place like that? That's why we need Lifeline, because of course we don't want to be it. We need Lifeline to rescue these kids. And I think why you're seeing more and more Democrat legislators stand up to the teachers union is because they know their neighbors. They know the kids on their block where they live deserve a choice and deserve an opportunity to succeed.
We have been talking with Guy Shirocki. Guy is a fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation. He writes for a number of opinion journals published throughout the state. Guy, if we have folks who would like to learn more or get in contact with you, where can they find you on the web? And otherwise, what is your contact information?
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity. This is really important, and I would welcome anyone's suggestions and certainly their support. They can find me at the Commonwealth Foundation or at Broad and Liberty. And on social media, for folks that like to do Twitter, as we now call it X or Facebook or other things, my handle is PA Suburbs Guy, because I live in the suburbs of Philadelphia. PA Suburbs Guy. You can find me, send me a message, or offer me a suggestion. I look forward to hearing from your listeners and working with them to get this done.
Guy Shirocki of the Commonwealth Foundation. Guy, thank you for taking time to be here.
Thank you.
Collections from Pennsylvania's corporate net income tax, one of the highest such taxes in the nation, remain strong. Cuts in that tax rate are beginning to take effect, which will improve the state's economic competitiveness going forward. Here with an Allegheny Institute report are Eric Montardi and Scott Cross.
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Scott Cross, Research Assistant for the Allegheny Institute. You recently worked on a policy brief that's available at our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, that deals with Pennsylvania's corporate net income tax. Scott, could you define what that tax is for our listeners and give us some insight as to how much revenue it collected in this fiscal year that just finished up?
So for this brief, we looked at the tax compendium, a publication that the government puts out with information on the various taxes in the state. And it defines the corporate net income tax as the tax paid by all domestic and foreign corporations for the privilege of doing business, carrying on activities, or employing or owning capital or property in Pennsylvania. Looking at the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue, which just released its data for the last fiscal year, although it's unaudited, the state says it collected $6.1 billion from the corporate net income tax, which is quite substantial. For reference, the year before that, in 2021-2022 fiscal year, it collected $5.3 billion. So this was a 15% increase.
Scott, last year a piece of legislation passed, which is now referred to as Act 53 of 2022. Can you give our listeners an idea of what the Act does to the corporate net income tax rate?
So Act 53 was a piece of new legislation that represented the first change to the corporate net income tax in Pennsylvania since the 1990s. And what it did was it put a reduction schedule on the corporate net income tax. So at the beginning of 2023 this year, the income tax was reduced from 9.99% to 8.99%, a 1 percentage point drop. And what the legislation says is that every year after this, the tax will experience a half percentage point drop. So next year in January, the percent will drop to 8.49%. And this will happen every year after until 2031, when the tax will be at 4.99%, and that's where it will stay.
The brief mentions that there is another piece of legislation that would speed up the reduction schedule that you just talked about under Act 53. Can you give us a description of what that would do?
So the proposal that we looked at called for alterations to the reduction schedule that was stipulated in Act 53. And what the proposal said was that instead of half percentage point reduction every year, it called for a 1 percentage point reduction every year. So it cut the reduction period in half. And so it would reach its goal of 4.99% in 2026 instead of 2031. And there have been various other legislative proposals that also wanted basically changes to the reduction schedule. But this was the one that we focused on in the brief.
As the rate drops, presumably there's going to be a reduction in corporate net income tax revenue. Is there a projection or a forecast right now for what exists under Act 53 schedule?
Yes. So the executive budget has estimated that by fiscal year 2027-28, when the tax rate will be set at 6.49% with Act 53, the revenue will have dropped to $4.2 billion. So that will be a 21% reduction in their funds that they bring in.
Let's look at this at a national level, Scott. You have some data in the brief that talks about the corporate income tax or corporate income taxes across the United States. Can you give our listeners an idea of how many states levy a corporate income tax and then where Pennsylvania ranks with this reduction under Act 53?
Absolutely. So in the United States, there are 44 states that currently levy a corporate income tax of some kind. 15 of those levy what is known as a marginal corporate income tax. And what that does is it taxes different businesses at a different percentage based on the income bracket that they fall into, and that varies depending on the state. 29 of these states, the other 29, levy a single rate, and this is what Pennsylvania does. It just says that there's one tax percentage for the entire state, and it doesn't matter how much that corporation makes. Comparing Pennsylvania to the other states, right now with its percentage at 8.99%, it has the third highest corporate income tax compared to other single rate states. And it has the fifth highest corporate income tax overall. Now, this is definitely an improvement based on last year when it had the second highest tax rate in the entire U.S.
How does Pennsylvania's rate compare to some of the neighboring states?
With this percentage reduction that it just had to 8.99%, it is getting closer to its neighboring states. For instance, Delaware and Maryland are very close to what it is now, with both having percentage rates at 8.7% and 8.25%. Others have rates that are slightly lower. For instance, New York and West Virginia are slightly lower, and others are substantially higher, with New Jersey and having the highest corporate income tax in the entire United States.
Pennsylvania cut its rate in 2023. Did other states do the same?
Yes, they did. It should be noted that Pennsylvania did not cut its rate in a vacuum. Iowa, Arkansas, Nebraska, Idaho, Colorado, and New Hampshire all cut their rates as well to varying degrees. But Pennsylvania had the second largest decrease behind Iowa, and it was the largest decrease among the single rate states that cut theirs.
Obviously, the idea behind the corporate and income tax reduction schedule is to attract businesses and people to Pennsylvania. Can you give us some data on what has been happening with migration and jobs in Pennsylvania in the last few years?
That's correct. The proposal is looking to hopefully incentivize individuals and corporations to move to Pennsylvania. In the brief, our source used the latest IRS migration data from 2020 to 2021 to see that Pennsylvania's population is actually decreasing at a substantial rate. That year, Pennsylvania's population decreased by more than 14,000 people. And these are working age people. We found that about a third were between the ages of 26 and 54. So these are people that are in their prime working age moving out of Pennsylvania. And we found that the states the Pennsylvanians were most likely to go to were in the South: Texas, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Florida, and then Delaware as well. All of these states except Delaware are right-to-work states. This phase down of the corporate net income tax will make Pennsylvania more attractive to both individuals and corporations, more business-friendly as well. If we look at the United States average, employment in non-farm jobs is up 1.1%. And Pennsylvania in particular, though, is down 1.3%. So we could see that Pennsylvania is not following the trend of the rest of the United States. It's actually decreasing its jobs, whereas the rest of the United States on average is gaining.
Scott, thank you for sharing this research with our listeners. We always invite our listeners to visit our website to read this brief and others. Visit us at www.alleghenyinstitute.org. For Scott Cross, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
The Biden administration's war on fossil fuels and Pennsylvania state-level anti-energy policies have driven gasoline prices back up over $4 per gallon. For a look at the impact, we turn to Emily Green of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania for this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
For many Americans, specifically Pennsylvanians, the pain at the pump has returned. In January of 2021, just before President Joe Biden was sworn into office, gas prices were at a national average of $2.81 a gallon. Though this was only less than 3 years ago, the change in political environment drastically impacted the way in which consumers view energy production and consumption. Even the least politically involved motorists recognized that this was not normal. Something had changed. By June of 2022, gas prices had reached a record high rate of $4.62 a gallon, a direct result of failed national and state policies. Rising gas prices are far more than just numbers on a pump. These numbers translate into real financial hardships for families across our state. The rising gas prices ultimately require families to make critical trade-offs in their budgets, diverting precious resources away from other essential needs such as education, healthcare, or quality of life improvements. In fact, last summer, Americans for Prosperity traversed the state talking with motorists right at the pump, where we heard the real stories of real Pennsylvanians making these trade-offs every day. One woman in Bensalem, just north of Philadelphia, shared that she would soon have to decide between putting fuel in her car to go to work or putting food on the table for her family. At Americans for Prosperity, we believe that in all of the above approach to energy production and consumption, one that puts the energy sector in the hands of the free market, is one that will allow Pennsylvanians to thrive. A market free of government intervention, such as green energy subsidies or cap and tax CO2 emission policy, is one that puts consumers first and allows Pennsylvanians to purchase critical, life-sustaining fuel at the lowest market price possible. Harrisburg lawmakers are no stranger to policy that shackles energy abundance. Policies such as our state gas tax, which remains one, if not the highest in the nation at 61 cents, force unnecessary financial burdens on an electorate that is already taxed enough. Despite the Senate's efforts this year to remove the automatic increase in state gas tax, the legislation remains held up in the Democrat-controlled House chamber. On top of that, former Governor Wolf's efforts to unilaterally join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a conglomerate of states joined in commitment to cap and tax carbon dioxide emissions, play a role in the record high numbers at the pump. By tapping into our state's abundant natural resources, we can create jobs and stimulate economic activity here in the Keystone State. However, we need to lessen the regulatory restraints on our energy sector to empower innovation, foster competition, and drive down costs. Pennsylvanians' participation in RGGI remains the most imminent threat to our energy abundance. A divided government in Washington has led to similar debate regarding a pro-freedom versus pro-control approach to energy production and consumption. H.R. 1, or the Lower Energy Costs Act, passed by a Republican-controlled House, would, among many things, roll back regulatory restrictions on energy production, eliminate new taxes on natural gas infrastructure, and ensure federal lands remain a source for domestic energy. In March, after House Republicans passed H.R. 1 on a near-straight partisan vote, Leader Schumer referred to the bill as, quote, dead on arrival in the Senate. Due to partisan politics, H.R. 1, the most comprehensive energy policy legislation we've seen in recent years, will not be allowed consideration on the Senate floor. As a result of partisanship from the Senate chamber, Americans continue to face hardships every week when they fill up their tanks. As concerned advocates for a free market approach to energy production, we believe that an unburdened energy market can lead to increased efficiency, reduced reliance on foreign sources, and ultimately lower prices at the pump for Pennsylvanians. Rising gas prices in Pennsylvania demand our attention, but they also present an opportunity for positive change. By advocating for reforms to our gas tax, rolling back regulatory barriers to energy production, and fostering market-driven competition, we can set a course towards economic prosperity and enhanced individual choice. Together, we can shape a future where Pennsylvanians enjoy greater freedom, lower costs, and a more vibrant economic outlook. Let us remember that the economic challenges posed by rising gas prices are not insurmountable. By advocating for energy deregulation, prioritizing energy abundance, and allowing consumer choice to flourish, we can ensure that Pennsylvania families are not unduly burdened. Together, united by our principles, we can pave the way for a brighter and more prosperous future for all. Check out prosperityispossible.com. This is Emily Green with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Find us on the web at AFP Pennsylvania on Twitter and at AFPPA on Facebook.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, WHHS-FM in Haverton, along with WWSM-AM in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.